Before I started off the episode, I just wanted to say that this episode of this recording is a little old. It's about a few months old. And unfortunately, this week we were unable to record and we didn't get the chance to do it. So as a result, I pulled out an older episode that we had recorded before. So it's a little different than our normal alternate history. And as Nick will discuss and explain later, we're talking about the 2010s and exactly the impact of the 2010s overall. So hope you enjoy. Let us know how you like this different format and enjoy part one.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Back to the Past, the Alternate History Podcast. This is Nick here. And as you can read from the title today, we decided to do something a little bit different. And we decided to talk about just how historians would view the decade of 2010, the one we just went through for the past 10 years. And so let's just get right on into it. And the first topic I wanted to really discuss about was technology and just technological advancements. First off, we have to talk about the major influence that the tech companies have had on us, especially in the last 10 years. I'm pretty sure you can find almost no one in the world who does not know what Apple, Google, Facebook are, even actually Amazon as well, to add on to that, as they've had such a profound impact on society within the past 10 years. And nowadays, some are even beginning to even question whether they're monopolies or not. Now, I'm not going to get too much into that in terms of whether they're monopolies or not. That's not really important. But in terms of that, and that'll be more important for, say, the historians of the future, as in my opinion, at least, that I think historians will kind of be split in both. I don't think the historians will be really split, mainly because I feel like the historians might view it in a way where they're both, where they're not monopolies. I mean, because there's definitely a few alternatives out there for specific products. Maybe the only exception might be Amazon, but you could also argue that's eBay as well. For example, with Apple. In their phones, you have Samsung, Android, you have multiple different competitors. With Facebook, you also have a ton of other social media, including their Instagram, which is also owned by them. But you have Snapchat, you have Twitter, you have tons of other crud. Then finally, we have Google, which you have, well, Google is the main search engine, and it's literally a word nowadays. It's kind of funny to think that you say, oh, I'm going to search this up. Now you say, I'm just going to Google it. And that just kind of shows how it's really affected society in general. So really the only main competitor with Google is actually just Bing, which is owned by Microsoft. And I think with that specifically, maybe the only one that might be argued as a monopoly in the future, in my opinion, at least with how historians would view it, would probably be Amazon. Outside of that, I also want to talk about this mainstreaming of streaming, which streaming back then was very foreign, mostly, with the exception of Netflix, for example, streaming movies, which was very new, as a matter of fact, and very revolutionary, actually, as well. And nowadays, if you look at how revolutionary it's been, it's put billion-dollar businesses like Blockbuster, for example, out of business, with the exception of that one store with Blockbuster in. And so, if you compare to nowadays, actually, in 2019, let's just say 2019, you have Spotify, Hulu. I can name a lot of other things that are now just streaming and on demand. It's absolutely insane. If you told someone in the year 2000 that in 15 years or so that you won't have to go, that Blockbuster won't be existent, and you'd be watching movies on this thing called Netflix or heck, even Hulu, they'd look at you and say, "What the heck is in your mind, dude?" And it's just very interesting. And I think historians will probably view this. It's almost like a second golden age of revitalizing, like, for example, the golden age of commodities. And what I mean by that is, for example, with the artificial intelligence advancing, especially into the 2020s and 2030s, and we began to saw that in the 2010s with drones becoming sort of mainstream as well. Outside of that, let's move on to Rohan. What's your opinion about everything I just said, specifically with technology? Because I know you're a pretty avid technology user and much more in it than I am, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, streaming is definitely going to change everything. Because like you said, I don't need to go to a Blockbuster anymore. I can just, with a few clicks, I can choose whatever I want to watch from a huge catalog and just stream it over the internet. No really extra effort required. I don't have to go to a Redbox machine or go buy a movie or whatnot. I mean, sure, it's had its cons. Like, for example, with Spotify, artists don't really get paid as much as they used to. I mean, they barely make anything nowadays. Compared to during the years of record labels where, like, you'd have to buy a record, artists don't make that much anymore. And I think a big reason for that is that because these Spotify, for example, they need to take their own cut to survive. I mean, Spotify is bleeding money right now. They're not profitable at all. But they still got to like take some money and then record labels like Universal Music or Sony, like all those companies, they also take their own cut too. So these artists, they're not getting paid as much as they used to back when you'd have to go and buy a disc or CD or a record. So it really has changed the landscape overall. And one more thing before we move on to cultures, I wanted to talk about online shopping. I know how Nick discussed Amazon. And I mean, Amazon did pioneer online shopping, especially in the 2010s. It just kicked off, really. And I think online shopping has really changed everything. And historians are going to look at this and they're going to see a fundamental shift in consumer spending patterns. Because as a result of us having to go to, you know, your local Walmart or Target to see what they have, to looking on Amazon to see the best price. I mean, that's what it's going to see. And it's going to show to these historians that all these other competitors like Walmart and Target have to also adapt and kind of e-commerceize themselves, essentially making the whole landscape more e-commerce, ordering stuff with your phone or checking inventory in general, you know, just go in, 2-day shipping and the strains that causes, but the convenience too. I mean, historians are definitely going to see that because it is a fundamental shift.
But yeah, Rohan, besides what you were mentioning about specifically with Amazon, there's also the fact that me being a pretty much into games a lot, because I'm a pretty avid game player, I'll admit that. There's also the fact that the shift towards digital sales on, for example, like you have like the Nintendo Switch and PSN, for example, which PSN has a lot of sales. And so I'm just trying to add on a little bit more substance to emphasize how important digital shopping has become. And as a fact, there's more digital sales nowadays. Well, specifically with a new game that came out, Ratchet and Clank that came out recently, that actually had more digital sales than it had physical sales. And without getting into too much of it, I think that shows the common trend for the game industry in the future. What say you?
Yeah, most definitely, because everything's just digitizing. It's just easier, more convenient. I mean, there's definitely some that like physical. I mean, who doesn't like to feel that you have this physical object and you own it? But digital is just more convenient. And I mean, you can get it quicker. You can get it instantly. Just start downloading it right away compared to physical. So now let's move on to culture. And I wanted to talk about social media in general. Because social media has allowed people from all over the globe to kind of connect with each other, make new friends, talk about each other's cultures and whatnot. But at the same time, it's also resulted in a spike in depression and suicide rates, which is not a good thing at all. And overall, anxiety is higher, and this unhealthy environment it promotes with all this loneliness and depression, sadness, because you can see in the pictures like, oh, this person looks so happy, why can't I be this happy, and all that depression. And then you have some people that'll use filters or post-processing to kind of make their images look better and make themselves look better, also hurting other people's emotions. And to add on to that, I wanted to add Tinder and online dating in general, because that's kind of changed stuff, because it's more binary now rather than, you know, getting to know the person, when not just left or right. There is no middle point or kind of in between somewhat. But overall, I think historians are going to look at social media with somewhat of a critical perspective, because despite all the benefits, it's got a lot of cons, and social media companies aren't the best either.
Yeah, I that's a thing I see a little bit differently per se. As I do think that historians might view this a bit negatively, I don't think they're going to view it in terms of social media in general, because social media is going to be revolutionized within the next 20 and 30 years. Heck, you could even look back to the early 2000s when MySpace was the biggest thing around. You don't see anybody really using that anymore. But getting back onto that point here, I feel like historians will view this as more so the early growing pains of social media, similar to how you would say that, for example, the early industrialization period was growing pains for an industrialized society, and this would be seen in many ways with overpopulation, and a lot of internal strife, as we saw, for example, in, like, for example, the 1860s when America had a civil war. While that was due to different reasons, you could also see the internal divide between the industrialized North and the agricultural South. And I feel like social media would be seen as more so as an early age, and that's why we see so many things happening. And I feel like eventually over time, as social media becomes more and more common and more accessible to people, which it already is a lot, but I think it would become even a little bit even more, to where even old people, and I mean old people for, but old people in terms of, like, not even baby boomers, I mean like Gen X, as Gen X gets older, for example, it'll be more accustomed to social media than, say, the baby boomers were. And I think with that, we would see the more, per se, more correct usage of social media, where it's in moderation than compared to, and that's how I think historians will view the 2010s as an early stage testing ground for social media. What about you? Would you agree with that sentiment, or do you still agree with historians looking at it as an overall negative time period for, or no, overall negative with social media?
I still think it's going to be more negative because, I mean, sure, it allows us to connect with each other, but I think my biggest, like, thing what the historians are going to look at is the depression, the loneliness rates, and anxiety, and the suicide. A whole generation is kind of growing up just depressed and unhappy, and that's not really good.
Yeah, I'm not debating the fact that that's definitely the case, and that's definitely the reason why, for example, we see depression rising and suicide rates actually rising as well amongst the young population, and especially with young girls as well, is because they see these beautiful models and they're like, oh, I wish I could be like them, have a body like them. And unfortunately, some don't have a body like that, and they feel really bad about themselves, which is definitely a huge con of social media, which has been seen multiple times. And one more thing before I move on to the next part of our cultural thing, and I just want to mention about Tinder as well, because Tinder has practically revolutionized dating. As how I would see it is, it's almost like it's kind of incentivizing hookups somewhat. As, don't get me wrong, you definitely build relationships through Tinder and online dating in general. But at the same time, though, you see a lot more hookups with Tinder in general. And that's to be expected from online dating. But at the same time, though, Tinder's also provided a simple and easy format to use. Swipe left, swipe right. And I don't actually know how historians would view this. And I think it might be lumped in with the entirety of social media, although I think it's a bit different. And I would love to see how it affects the next generation of people who are growing up right now, including us. And I just want to move on to the next topic, which was huge during the 2010s, more so mid-2010s, and it's gained traction since then, which is the legalizing of LGBT marriage. And no matter what side of the aisle you come from, you have to admit this is huge. And I think it's actually very monumental, and I think it was actually a very good decision for society, as a matter of fact, because while some people might not agree with it, it should not prevent people from getting married. And it also has provided some negatives. And for example, you could see it online, for example, with a lot of people tending to be a lot more openly homophobic online. And don't get me wrong, there was a lot. And don't get me wrong, homophobia is a lot more common now. I would say homophobia is a lot more common nowadays, actually. And I mean more so in the closet homophobia, per se, where somebody's secretly, homophobic and they don't like gay people, but they won't express those views out in the open because of the fact is that, and I think that's a huge problem. I think that's a huge problem. And I hope that is addressed within the next 20 or so years. But overall, though, I think historians and everyone really, almost everyone should really view this as a great decision, because it shows that humans, no matter what, are still equal. And that's how, and I think that's how the world should really be, that all humans are equal, are created and born equal. And I'm not surprised that this decision was inevitable. And I think historians would also agree with that. But I think historians overall would view it as a very big positive. And I think I would too. What say you, Rohan?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely monumental. It's just going to change culture and kind of make it more accepting overall.
Yeah, that's really a big point. And I think that with the exceptions of the LGBT community, for example, in modern society, it's overall created a more safer society for them to live in without being feared of. Well, I'm saying at least in the West, at least, with them being safe and all, with them feeling safe and all in the current society. However, I think we should also move on, and we should also talk about specifically the cancel culture and the Me Too movement. And this is pretty huge. And if you don't know what the Me Too movement is, which I'm surprised if you wouldn't at this point, the Me Too movement was originally centralized around Harvey Weinstein, for example, which Harvey Weinstein was a rapist and thankfully convicted. And we also have that also being used against Bill Cosby and a couple other people that doesn't come to mind immediately. But at first, it did become was a really good positive. But unfortunately for the Me Too movement, however, it was in similar relation to the cancel culture, which was used to great effect. And I think that unfortunately for both, it's become more politicized over the past few years, and it's mainly because of both sides using it. I'm not going to say, oh, it's the left using it only, or oh, it's the right using it only. I think it's a fair combination of both, and both have their own hypocrisies. And I think historians specifically will view that early age as, you know, of positive for human society. However, what it's turned into would be viewed as I don't think as an overall negative. But like, for example, with cancel culture being used nowadays, sometimes really just used on anybody who disagrees, even if they're not, you know, homophobic, racist, etc. I feel like that specific part of cancel culture will be viewed as an overall negative. And I hope, honestly, cancel culture just reforms itself back to how it used to be back in the early stages of it, when it was actually used to great effectiveness. What about you, Rohan? How do you think historians will view this?
I think cancel culture is just kind of be viewed as this time where, like, humans are kind of learning the boundaries of this new tool, per se. They're kind of realizing how powerful of a tool social media is overall. So it's kind of a learning period, per se. I feel like eventually it's going to, like, tune down as humans are going to realize, like, I guess, the boundaries of the tool and use it accordingly. But I know it might sound a bit weird. I know it may sound a bit weird, but I feel like we're in the learning stage right now.
But yeah, like I said, and I think this relates back to social media, for example, when we were talking about it earlier. We're still in the learning stages. And that's why I said historians will probably view this as an almost like the early industrialization period in world history. As, you know, we're testing it out and we don't know what's going to happen with it. And so, yeah, I do have hope for the future where we actually use it to great effectiveness, similar to how the Me Too movement was also used for great effectiveness. And now moving on, let's move on to a little bit more pop culture. And I think we have to talk about specifically around the rise of the comic book movie popularity. And this is, I'm referring specifically in this case to Marvel. Marvel became huge in the 2010s. And this starts off really with back in the late 2000s with Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk. But I think it really begins to kick off around 2012 with the Avengers. And it brings up a pretty funny point, because I'm not really a huge comic book fan, but I'm pretty sure that the majority of people who watch the Avengers would probably see Iron Man as now the face of Marvel. But in my opinion, as someone who's not really a big comic book fan, I would still say it's probably Spider-Man. But I feel like I'm very glad at least Spider-Man was included into the MCU and actually is pictured as to be the next big guy, almost like how Iron Man was. And the rise of the comic book movie popularity, and this also relates to DC as well, with the Snyder Cut movie. The Snyder Cut coming out around 2021 for the Justice League, and I think I think this will be very unique to the 2010s, and I think historians will view this as a pretty oddball part, as I think comic book movies, specifically because after the aftermath of Avengers Endgame, I feel like people won't really be too interested in seeing comic book movies anymore, especially the ones who got into it at the start of the MCU around 2008. 2007, I believe the first Iron Man was made. And yeah, I think it'll be kind of viewed as a quirk of the 2010s as well. So moving on to the next topic is we have to definitely talk about Black Lives Matter. Well, Black Lives Matter became very influential within the past 2 years, being 2020 and 2021, which it really began with the murder of Trayvon Martin, who was an African American man who was shot and then eventually died due to the injuries of being shot by George Zimmerman, who was a night watch captain. And not going on into the details of the case, this caused the first big protest that Black Lives Matter had. Then it began to gain more and more popularity with the case of Michael Brown, who was shot and killed in Ferguson. And so I believe Black Lives Matter can be really attributed to be kicked off as a result of the of the death of Michael Brown, who was shot by police officers. And I still remember actually watching it on TV, watching all the stuff that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, which is where the shooting took place, with the Black Lives Matter protests, which in some cases got violent, which in some protests it is expected to happen. And I'm not talking about Black Lives Matter in specific, but I'm just talking about in general. And then as it began gained more and more popularity, and I would say really that the biggest one of the biggest parts of BLM was definitely with what happened with Eric Garner, who got killed because of the fact is that an officer, which is I'm not going to list his name here, but basically he held him in a chokehold, and it was actually banned during the time period under NYPD policy, and he tried to pull it off as being a legal takedown. So he was choked, and then he died. And then he died as a result of being choked. And this is where BLM really became mainstream. And then as a result, in a few years later in 2019, he was actually fired, the officer. And so BLM, I think outside of those few cases, as long as there's probably multiple others I'm probably missing, they really resurged as a result of George Floyd, which I'm not going to get into. And
so that's going to be it for part one. I hope you enjoyed this different style of episode. Again, I apologize for not being able to get our standard alternate history scenario out this week. And I'm sorry this episode's coming out late. It's just been a hectic week these past 2 weeks. So I do apologize for that on behalf of the Back to the Past team. So if you did enjoy this, please let us know. I'm thinking of scheduling part two to release sometime later in the month. Or in a month from now, I'm not entirely sure. Let me know when you guys want to see part two next. I might do it next week or the week after. And I'm thinking to do it in addition to their standard episode. But thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you all had a great day so far. And if it's night, have a good night. Make sure to leave a review for this podcast at the website ratethispodcast.com/althistory. Check out our Instagram and Twitter with the handle at BackToThePastP1, and make sure to follow us as we keep you updated on the podcast status and post some cool facts as well, and really cool videos about upcoming episodes and ones that have already released so far. Other than that, I hope you all have a great day.